Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility, that's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. Well, hi again, and thank you for being here wherever you may be. If you're not sure, you are listening to the Unstoppable Mindset podcast, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. And we deliberately put inclusion before diversity because, in my experience, diversity has not involved disabilities very much. Several of you have probably heard me say that on this podcast before. And you'll probably hear it some more, and you may even hear it from our guest today, who also happens to be a person who is blind. So Wayne Tuttle, welcome to Unstoppable Mindset.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, for having me.
Glad you're here. And Wayne was introduced by someone who heard him speak at a Toastmasters group. Someone, as I recall, you didn't even know, but they liked what you had to say and introduced the two of us. And here we are, which is always a fun thing.
Yeah, brilliant. It's a small, small world.
It is, and grows smaller daily. Well, tell me a little bit about you. Tell me about your childhood and all that, growing up and so on. And I gather from reading your bio and so on that you were not initially blind?
No, actually, I didn't start losing my vision until the year after I graduated college. I was on track to be involved with radio and television broadcasting, more so in the radio part of it. I never really wanted to be in front of the microphone. I always wanted to do the production end of it. And unfortunately, back in the day, it was really difficult to break into that market. You always seemed to have on-air experience for at least a year before they would even think about putting you into production. And unfortunately, since my vision was starting to change considerably, it was very difficult at that time because everything was done manually. It's not like today, everything is so technologically advanced. So
how long ago was that?
Oh, wow. Well, that's going to divulge my age. It was back in 1975.
There you go. I know the year well, so yeah. No problem. Well, so before then, you went to school and high school and all that and got into college, I gather, before you started losing eyesight?
Yeah, like I thought as a kid, I felt very different than everybody else. It seemed like, you know, the old saying your parents would always say, oh, make sure you're home before the streetlights come on. Well, for me, darkness started early. So I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. And for those of you that are not familiar with it, part of it has to do with night blindness. So I thought everybody had the same issue as I did, that I wasn't able to see as well as everybody else. But it was like playing hide and go seek or playing tag. It became more and more difficult for me. But as time progressed, I started losing the peripheral part of it. And I was okay for a number of years. It just started progressing over the years. It would level off and then would go down a little bit more. And then finally, I guess it was around 2017, where I lost the remainder portion of my vision.
So did you ever get an opportunity to go into radio production or TV production?
Well, it was really funny that you asked that. On the onslaught, as far as getting into the business, no, I was never really involved with it. But it wasn't until I lost my vision that a lot of doors opened up. I became very involved with the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, of the RP Foundation. They were named that at the time. They've since changed the name, the Foundation Fighting Blindness. And I just started having more and more opportunities. I'd be invited on different radio shows, television shows, magazines, all kinds of different opportunities, I think, because of it.
So you end up being in front of the microphone after all.
Unfortunately, but I was involved with, I've been in three different documentaries. So I was behind the camera as well as in front of the camera. I did some producing and directing in that aspect. I've produced a number of podcasts over the years and that sort of thing. So I still like to keep my hands involved with it. Now, with the advent of so much different technologies out there, as you know, Michael, with you using Reaper. Reaper is a program that's fully accessible for people who are blind. And that's one of my next missions, to really start to learn the editing portion of it without vision.
Well, and you will find using Reaper that a lot of that is really very open and accessible. As you pointed out, I've been using Reaper now for, almost a year, and have not done anything in terms of really editing music or any of that. And Reaper certainly has the capabilities to do that. But as far as being a mechanism to do editing for podcasts, it is great.
Oh, absolutely. And there's so many different tutorials on YouTube and a lot of different people that you can network with. They have Facebook groups that they share their different tips and tricks. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, there's a lot there. It's a lot of fun to do. And in fact, I just edited a podcast episode that we're going to put up next week, and I'm always learning new things, but I was very pleased with the results in just doing simple editing, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So were you out of college by the time you started losing eyesight, or was that before you left college?
It started really taking effect around 1976. I knew there was some changes going on with my vision, especially with the peripheral part of it. And I searched out all kinds of different so-called, what I would say, so-called specialists. I had everything from diagnosis of having cancer to I'm not sure what it is. You've got tumors, you've got this, you've got that. And finally, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa with Usher syndrome.
When did that happen?
I wasn't actually diagnosed with Usher's till I was 30.
Okay.
So I guess I was around, 1920 in 1976.
Okay. So you definitely started to see changes and so on, but you went ahead and went through college?
Mm-hmm.
And then what did you do?
Well, from there, since I wasn't able to get a job in the business, I moved back to my hometown, which is a very small community in northern Ontario in Canada, maybe a population at the time around 10,000 people. So there really wasn't a lot of opportunity available. They did have their own radio station at the time. And from time to time, I got to know some of the disc jockeys, and I would go in and do my audition tapes and use in their studio and that sort of thing. But I still had that dream that I always wanted to get into radio. But unfortunately, I had to put it on the shelf for a while. I went back and worked in a factory, the same factory I did when I was a kid. So I thought after a year, I said, no, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I want to do something different. So there was an ad in one of the major newspapers in Toronto, Ontario, one of the largest cities in Canada. They had advertisement for someone in communications for the Toronto Stock Exchange, right on the Toronto Stock Exchange trading floor. I applied for the job and they hired me on the spot. So wow. Within 3 weeks, I was moving from a little tiny town to the big scary city.
What were you making in the manufacturing plant? What were you doing?
Funny you should ask. It was bridal gowns and bridesmaids gowns.
There you go. So
it was formal wear. And I was involved in the cutting area where we would cut the patterns out with all these electrical saw type things. And a little bit dangerous as you're starting to lose your vision, but I managed.
Did they know that you were blind or losing eyesight?
Oh, no. No.
You would have been
back in the day, that was taboo. You never, ever told your employer that things were changing because you always had that fear of losing your job because of it.
Sure. So you moved to the stock exchange. Did you mention anything about eyesight during that process at all?
For the first 2 years, no.
Okay.
I did not let on at all. And the way that things worked on the Toronto Stock Exchange, you would be working for the Toronto Stock Exchange, but there was all kinds of brokerage firms that were always scouting for people up in the back office or to do different things on the trading floor and that sort of thing. So I was scouted out 2 years later, and I got hired on by Merrill Lynch, one of the largest in the United States and in Canada.
Yes.
And I eventually told them that the job was becoming more and more difficult. And you have to remember, this is going back late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. So technology for people with vision loss was very archaic. I mean, the first technology that I worked with was a CCTV system.
Right.
Where I would put the piece of paper underneath the camera and it would enlarge it up to whatever size that I needed and continue on with that. So it was quite a challenge at the beginning.
So when you told them, though, what happened?
I was very fortunate that I had a boss who was very receptive to it. She saw that the things were changing. And then, of course, you try and cover things up and get around things, asking other people to do things for you and that sort of thing. But it got to the point where I think deep down I knew she knew. So I eventually had to have that conversation and say, I really need to look at other adaptive technology and I need to be, I guess, more so accommodated.
What did she do?
Well, she took me off what I refer to the assembly line, where we had to do a lot of communication, but back in the day it was teletype.
Yes.
There was no real thought of computers yet.
No.
So we were using World War II technology with the teletype and that sort of thing. But I eventually started climbing up the ladder and became a manager of the department. And I had 28 people under me. So I would spend my day, half of the day would be right on the trading floor of the Toronto Stock Exchange. And the other half of the day, I would be up in the office.
Why do you suppose that she reacted in such a positive way when you finally told her what you needed to tell her?
Well, I think we had a very good relationship. Inside work, she was a taskmaster. She was very, very strict. I'd like to use the word, but it's not appropriate. But she, I can remember.
She was tough.
Very, yes, very, very tough. And I can remember, I was there 12 years. And I can remember probably around year 10, year 11, I had just had enough of it. She was always on me. So I said, can I talk with you? We went into her office, closed the door. And I said, what is going on? I am just so tired of you always on me. And she said to me, you know something? Because of your vision loss, if you ever leave this environment, it's going to be tough out there for you. So I'm just trying to toughen you up. And when you know it, 2 years later, I left.
Why did you leave?
I needed a change.
Okay.
I think it was the stress level. Because it wasn't a typical 9-to-5 job, you were basically there until the job was done, because you would have to send information to other departments and they couldn't start their job until your job was done. So I know there was many, many times at 10 o'clock at night, you starting at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, the stress level really started to wear me down.
Of course,
a lot of people in that environment leave because of that.
Of course, the reality is with the stock exchange, and I'm familiar with it from selling products to Wall Street and interacting with them a lot. It really is a 24-hour a day job for the company, because stocks are being traded somewhere most all the time.
Absolutely.
And information is extremely important. I remember once being down in Florida. We were working with some folks from, at that time, it was Solomon Brothers, and then became Solomon Smith Barney, and now it's gone away. But we were down there because we sold the products that people use to back up their data. And so we were talking with some of the people at the backup facility for the Wall Street trading floor, and they made it really clear that even if they were down for 1 minute, they would lose millions and millions of dollars in transactions. They could afford never to be down.
Oh,
and they actually had two backup facilities in Florida and had them somewhat underground and in places so that even if there was a hurricane, they would be able to continue to back up and operate and provide support.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just unbelievable. You know, the old saying, time is money. In the stock market industry, basically seconds count.
Seconds absolutely count. I can't remember. It seems to me it was something like possibly up to $5 million a second they would lose if they were ever down.
Yeah.
It was something incredibly awesome in terms of the amount.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of stress. So you left the stock exchange. So that must have been about what, 2000, 2001 or?
No, that was 1980.
Oh, okay.
89.
All right. And then what did you do?
I was searching around. I thought I wanted to get into the personnel industry. I did a short stint at Children's Aid Society. And then I had an opportunity to get back into communications with Rogers Communications.
Huh.
And I was there for another 10 years.
You didn't sell telephones, though.
No.
I don't understand.
So, yeah, that
so
was a
you,
fun job.
What did you do?
I was in the call center.
Okay.
So I was a manager in the call center, and occasionally I would have to deal with difficult customers and that sort of thing.
Oh, you couldn't have any difficult customers. Couldn't happen.
Well, if the weather network goes off, yeah, the phone would light up.
Yeah.
Or if the Mike Tyson fight only lasted
2 minutes and 6 seconds. Yes.
Yeah. I was there.
I remember that fight. We were watching it. I was with relatives or a friend. I guess it was relatives. Anyway, we watched it on TV.
Yeah.
I never thought about the fact that people would be all ticked off that it didn't last very long. But hey, he was doing his job.
Well, especially if they're paying that kind of money.
you pay your money, you take your chances.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you do after being with Rogers for a while? So now you're getting close to 2000, I assume.
Yeah, I think it was, I guess it was 3 years before I left Rogers. I took a transfer to a smaller community. It was, the head office was in Toronto, but they had satellite offices throughout Southern Ontario. And I decided that, you know, it was time maybe my wife and I would think about starting a family, and we wanted to get out of the city, the hustle and bustle type of thing. So it was still a city we were moving to. And I took a job in their call center. It was a little bit different than what was in the head office. But they decided after 3 years of being there, they pulled me in the day before my birthday and announced that, oh, we no longer need you anymore.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, at that time, I was still looking at starting my own business. I think that really gave me the drive to take my business to the next level.
Mm-hmm. So they invited you to no longer be connected with Rogers. And then what?
And then I started my own business. And I haven't looked back since.
And what were you doing? And what is your business?
Doing motivational speaking, different types of workshops, everything from disability awareness to breaking down barriers to employment for people with disabilities, doing different types of keynote addresses at high schools, doing workshops for local groups. Here in Canada, they call it Scouts Canada as opposed to Boy Scouts in the United States. So I did a lot of work with them, a lot of nonprofit organizations and that sort of thing. So
why go into motivational speaking? Was your eyesight sufficiently changed by that time that it made good sense, or what caused you to do that?
I don't know. I really enjoyed speaking in front of people and sharing my story. I think that so, really sparked an interest with it.
Was your story, though, a lot about the concept of eyesight and disabilities and so on at that point?
Well, I think my message was that, you know, the sky's the limit. Follow your dreams, no matter what adversity that you face in your life. Mm-hmm. There's always a possibility. You have to want it bad enough to achieve it.
What's the favorite venue since you became a motivational speaker? What's your favorite place that you've been or a place that stands out in your mind?
Oh, Lord. Oh, there's so many of them. I think probably, I don't know whether I would say it's my favorite, but the most fun was the Ride for Sight. I would speak every year at the Ride for Sight, and we would have anywhere up to 9,000 rowdy bikers.
And they listen to you?
Well, it's funny you should ask, Michael. It was so strange because, of course, these guys are there to celebrate. They're there because they've raised literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in a short period of time. And they really want to let their hair down. So, but mm-hmm. every time I got up on stage, it was almost like it was a pin could drop. Mm-hmm. I would always make it a short address because I know that they were there to party and carry on. And I always had an opportunity to play with the band that was there. I'm an accomplished musician. I play bass as well as drums. And I've been doing that since I was about 14 years old. So I had that opportunity. And I think that's where I had my most fun, really.
It's interesting that you came to speaking in the way you did. And you certainly obviously had a lot of fun doing it. And along the way, I also know that you joined Toastmasters. When did you do that?
2016.
Okay. So you've now been in Toastmasters about 6 years. And has Toastmasters been an advantage and a help to your speaking career and to your speaking style and so on?
I am a totally, totally different speaker than I was years before. It got to the point where I was doing a lot of speaking engagements, and some of them were repetitious. I never had a mentor. So I learned this craft on my own, but I felt there was something missing. I needed to freshen it up. Well, I heard about Dale Carnegie, but I didn't think that was for me. And I just went on Google one day, and I don't even know what keywords I used. And all of a sudden, this thing came up, Toastmasters.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is a Toastmaster? A bunch of old guys sitting around the table having toast after toast? Or is it a gourmet toast making thing or something? I don't know. So I started to investigate it more and ended up going to a few meetings, and I said, yep, this is what I want to do. So in 2021, I decided to take it to even the next level and joined an advanced Toastmaster club.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I write differently. My speeches are written differently. My workshops are different. My presentations are totally different than what I used to. And I'd like to say they're more effective.
One would think, and I think appropriately so, that being blind shouldn't really affect your ability to participate in Toastmasters, much less being a public speaker. From my own experience, of course, I say that.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly finding a tool to help you with that, like a Toastmasters, makes a lot of sense to do.
Oh, absolutely. But I also find that one of the things that I've noticed is that there are literally thousands or even hundreds of thousands of speakers out there. And to get into that type of market, you have to have some kind of hook.
Mm-hmm.
To stand out, you have to be different than the rest of the crowd. And I find that because of my blindness, I seem to be getting more bookings now, more so than I ever have.
Why is that?
I don't know. I wish I had that answer. I don't know if it's people are intrigued by that fact. They want to see something different.
Do you work with a speakers bureau, or how do you find speaking engagements?
I was with the speakers bureau for a short period of time, but unfortunately I probably joined the wrong one, but it's pretty much word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Someone sees me at an event, and usually people in the crowd will come up and want to chat with me and do different things. I dabble into a lot of different things. One of the things that I'm involved with, I've been a Titanic historian and artifact collector ever since I can remember, probably early 70s. And usually around the anniversary date, I usually have a few bookings. I do my displays of my collection, and I do a 2-hour presentation about the Titanic.
Mm. You never show the movie. Well, tell me.
I've only seen it a few thousand times.
Yeah. I understand.
But James Cameron, he did do a good job of it.
Oh, it's a good movie. And in fact, when it came out, it is long enough ago that we bought the VHS tape version of it, which was two cartridges. It wasn't one.
Yeah.
It was, if I recall, 3 hours plus, not 4 hours. It was three hours.
At least. Yeah.
So to be nominated for an Academy Award, though, you could not have a movie that was that long. So they always portrayed it as being only 2 hours and 74 minutes long.
Yeah.
So that's how they had it under 3 hours. It was kind of funny.
Exactly.
But let's go back to blindness a little bit. Tell me some of the strangest and most absurd questions you've ever been given or experienced. And we can sit here and talk about that all day, the two of us, but we'll start with you.
Oh, my Lord. It is hilarious. I think the funniest ones are kids, especially the elementary kids. You know, kids will say the darndest things. They don't care, you know, like Here's some of them. Is your wife blind too?
Mm-hmm.
No, she's a blonde. She's not blind. She's a blonde. I remember this one presentation I did. This kid was so excited. He wanted to ask the question, you know, at grade two, grade three level, it's always that, and you're jumping up and down and, oh, okay. And he was kind of a little shy, a little bashful, and he's like, of course, he didn't take Toastmasters. He wouldn't have said so many ums, but he said, what you got, is it Cacagus? That's a Cacagus. What does he mean? Oh, do you mean, can you get it?
Contagious.
Contagious, right? So I said, well, why don't you come up here and shake my hand?
I think the funniest question I ever got was also from someone, and I don't remember what grade they were in. It was a guy, of course, it would be a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his question was, how do blind people have sex? And he said it with an absolutely straight face.
Oh, my word.
And so the only way I could really respond to that was to say, the same way everyone else does. And if you want to know more about that, you really need to ask your parents.
Yeah. I've never had that question, but I've always had the question, how do you go pee all the time?
I haven't had that one.
Yeah. Same way as you do. No different. But I think, you know, it's not, Michael, it's not just the questions. It's the comments. And one of the comments that I get all the time is, well, you don't look blind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't look blind at all.
You don't look stupid.
I had an insurance agent call me once on the phone when I was in college, and he said that he wanted to come and sell me insurance. And I knew that insurance companies at that point would not sell life insurance to any person with a disability. But I figured, oh, what the heck? And I said, sure, come on over.
Yeah.
He arrived at 3 p.m. and I went to the door and opened the door, and I had my guide dog with me. I decided to do this upright, right? So I had the dog in harness. And he said, I'm looking for Michael Hinkson. And I said, I'm Mike Hinkson. And he said, you're Mike Hinkson? And I said, yeah. Well, you didn't sound blind on the telephone. And it was so tempting to say, and you didn't sound stupid on the telephone either. Yeah. And of course, needless to say, he came in and hemmed and hawed around. And he said, I have to call my boss. And I never heard from him again.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, as we know, the reason that insurance companies would not sell insurance, life insurance, to blind or other persons with disabilities back in the 70s was not due to actuarial statistics or any fact, but rather simply to prejudice.
Yes.
And we were able to eventually fight that. There's still a lot of it out there, but still at the time we couldn't buy any kind of insurance. My parents, when it was discovered I was blind, couldn't even buy $1,000 life insurance policy on me. They could not. It would have cost so much because of the fact that the insurance companies were steeped in this prejudice that blindness was going to create a situation where I would die off sooner than other people.
Yeah. Well, I had a situation not similar to life insurance. It was coverage with one of the companies that I work with. Their insurance company paid for prescription glasses. Well, I didn't need prescription glasses. Back in the day, they were experimenting with what they called Corning lenses,
right?
Which they figured it would be a preventative measure. So I had to fight the insurance company because these Corning glasses were extremely expensive. And I actually won. They did pay for the preventative glasses.
It's fascinating to really look at what people's attitudes are. And you mentioned that a lot of questions that you get from kids are funny and so on. But the neat thing about any question from a child is still, it really comes from curiosity. And mostly it doesn't come from fear. It really does come from curiosity. And if there's fear, it's because there's been fear instilled in them by their parents who are afraid of blindness or, oh, I wouldn't want to catch that or ever have that ever happen to me. Even though the reality is that in our world today, given all the things that are out there that can happen to one, blindness is clearly something that anyone might have the opportunity to experience. But kids always ask questions, and I think it really comes from curiosity. So they're always worth answering. I had go ahead.
I was just going to comment on with the mentality of some people in our public is that they have this understanding that it could be possible that you could catch blindness.
Yeah.
I noticed a huge difference when I was using a white cane. People would literally, if you're sitting on the bus, they would kind of shift over to the left. Well, I don't want to touch that person. Mm-hmm. But when I'm out with my guide dog, totally different story.
Yep.
People are swarming around you like flies to honey type of thing.
It's all about the dog. Well, you know, and that's one of the things about the foundation fighting blindness. The reality is it doesn't fight blindness. It fights eye disease, and it shouldn't talk about fighting blindness, but it does. Yeah. Back in 2016, they created this campaign called How I See It, and I was EYE, and they wanted people to blindfold themselves and then take videos of them trying to perform a lot of different kinds of actions around their home and so on. Right. And of course, it was all giving an absolutely wrong and horrible depiction of blindness because, of course, none of these people were trained to do what they did. And finally, and I was involved in a lot of ways with it, but finally, blind people ourselves started sending in videos saying, no, this is the real picture, and overwhelmed the site. And eventually Foundation Fighting Blindness took the site down. And there were some discussions afterward, but the reality is blindness isn't the problem. It is still the attitudes and misconceptions that people have. And unfortunately at that time that the foundation promoted that didn't help the situation at all, which is extremely unfortunate.
Absolutely. And you'll find that kids today are more understanding than adults are. When you have adults that are around our age, they're old school. So they maybe have been brought up in a small community, or even if they're in a very large city, they may or may not have had the experience to interact with someone who is different, whether they're blind or in a wheelchair or what have you. And then all of a sudden, there's someone in their church group that's in a wheelchair or Toastmasters that's blind. They just don't understand and they're afraid. I don't want to offend them. I don't know what the right words are. How many times have you heard people say, oh, did you hear that movie last night? Yeah. What do you mean, hear that movie? No, I watched a movie last night and I've seen it before. Yes, I don't take those words out of my vocabulary because I have no vision. It's still just a part of it.
In fact, as I tell people, I think I have lots of vision. And I try to make light of it. I just don't see so good. But the reality is, and that's the problem with even using the word vision, but I'm not sure there's a better solution. But the reality is we're either blind or low vision. And I think it is something that we really should deal with. The concept of visually impaired is ridiculous because visually is a completely different thing than eyesight altogether. It has to do with appearance and aesthetics and so on. And the fact is we're not visually impaired. It's better to say low vision. It's like with deaf people who don't want to be called hearing impaired. They're deaf or hard of hearing. We are blind or low vision. And I think that's an appropriate way to put it that is acceptable to everyone. But the fact is that blindness still isn't the problem. it is still all about attitudes, and we've got to change that. And I would like to see organizations like the foundation enter that discussion in a positive way. There's nothing wrong with trying to cure eye disease, but don't do it at the expense of providing misconceptions about what blindness is and what it isn't. And that's unfortunately what happens all too often.
Absolutely. And I think it really comes down to where you're from as well, because in some countries they use different terminologies.
Sure.
And it's always changing. Like the newest trend that I've been hearing is differently abled.
Yes.
What?
It's horrible because we're not differently abled. Hey, yeah. I use Reaper like anyone else does. I use a keyboard. I don't use a mouse, but I use a keyboard. And more people should use keyboards because sometimes they're faster than mice. But the concept of differently abled is horrible. It still depicts the fear.
Yeah.
And my wife is in a wheelchair. She's been in a chair her whole life, differently abled. That's ridiculous, but it is oftentimes what we experience. And more of us who happen to be in the community of persons with disabilities are trying to get people to understand that words matter. It's no different than any other minority group who has been down this road, except that I think that there's a lot more fear associated with disabilities. And so as a result, it makes it tougher because no one wants to be like them. That is still the thing that we face.
Exactly. And I coined a new phrase that I am a sighted man living in a blind man's body.
I am light independent. It's as simple as that. And the reality is most everyone in this world has the disability of being light dependent.
Yeah.
And you know, the reality is that we love you anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You're light dependent. Yeah. So, you know, it is just kind of what we have to deal with. On the other hand, being blind, what kind of embarrassing things have happened to you? We all have had those kinds of things too.
My word. Depending on how much time do we have, Michael, I'd like to share this story with the audience, and I'll try and give you the Reader's Digest version of it, but it has to be the absolute worst day of my life and the funniest day of my life. It was my dad's funeral, 2010. I was to be giving the eulogy. And unfortunately, because I was so close to my dad, I wasn't able to deliver it. I wrote it and had the minister read it. But at that time, my sister-in-law, she was newly blind and she had her first guide dog, and I was there with my guide dog. And it was time for us to leave. And since we were the immediate family, we were to leave the chapel first, and the rest of the parishioners would follow us out to the hearse. Well, her guide dog had this uncanny ability to lie on his back and snore. And do you think we could get him to get up? She just could not get him up. So my brother literally had to lift him up to get him going. Whereas my dog, Cosmo, she decided that as she got up, she let a very aromatic odor go that caused my great aunt to start choking because it was so bad. Well, of course, that sort of broke the ice a bit. We got to the gravesite and there were chairs set up for the immediate family. So prior to the rest of the congregation showing up, like my father was very popular in the town. He was a volunteer firefighter. He was a model railroader, so he belonged to a few clubs and whatnot. So there had to be, I would say 100 or so people there. And my wife and I we rehearsed how many steps it was from the chairs up to the gravesite. My father was cremated, so this was the very first time that I was involved with a cremation. All I knew was a tiny little coffin, and they told me go up to the hole and then just sort of drop it in. So I counted the steps up to how far away it was. We sat down, so it was time for me to do it. I got up there, and I went to reach down, and I felt the actual hole with my arm, but I didn't have any clue of how deep this was. I was thinking in my head, well, maybe it's only like 3 foot deep or anything, and I didn't want to drop him. So I leaned forward, and all of a sudden, I'm going in the hole, and my wife is trying to grab a hold of me. My brother jumps up out of his chair, grabs me by the back of the pants, and lifts me out of the hole. And I couldn't think of anything else to say but, ta-da!
There you go. You know, it is, we all have experiences, and it's okay. Blindness has nothing to do with it. I doubt that there's any person who hasn't had something in their lives that has happened that they haven't been embarrassed over or found to be funny. I was with one of my guide dogs. We were wandering the halls of Congress, and we had a few of those aromatic kinds of things that happened with her. And the more I thought about it, the more I went, well, it was in Congress. They deserve it anyway. So it's okay. But you know, you just gotta go to it. Well, so tell me, in your experience, we've been seeing more laws pass, and we've been seeing advances in technology and so on. Do you think that society's attitudes toward persons with disabilities is changing significantly yet? What do you think?
Yes and no, and the reason I say yes is I'm finding that younger kids today, they get it. They understand. I've been in situations where I would be in a grocery store with my guide dog and a mother would come over and automatically think it's okay to bend down and start patting. And right away, the young child would say, oh, mommy, he's a working dog. You're not allowed to distract him or pet him or anything like that. So yes, I've seen some steps forward with getting kids at a younger age. And it takes people like yourself and myself to go around to schools and educate and really get the word out that there are people in our society today with disabilities. But on the other hand, I think governments really have to get more involved with people with disabilities in the sense of having different type of programs available out there. There are still a lot of discrimination when it comes to employment. If an individual with a disability wants to start their own business, they should have programs available out there to teach entrepreneurship for people with disabilities. It's really no different than any other entrepreneur, but they have to do things a little bit different so they can be involved with it. But again, I think we have a long way to go. In Canada here, we've got all kinds of different laws, but every province seems to be different. And I'm sure it's no different in the United States. They are trying to implement different laws to assist people with disabilities, but they still have a long, long way to go. They're chipping away at it, but a lot of these people who are living with disabilities, time's running out.
Yeah.
So what about the next generation that comes along after us? Like, it's despicable the amount of money that the government puts aside for people with disabilities. With the inflation, especially in the last couple of years, it's unbelievable. So you have to make that choice whether to pay your rent or whether you're going to eat today.
Do you think that there is any more awareness in the world because of the pandemic and the fact that we've had to do so many things online? Has that really made a big difference?
In some ways it has. Like, every country is different, especially when it comes to disabilities. There are countries around our world that still want to hide people with disabilities. They're not allowed to be out in public. They've shamed the family because of the disability.
What happens in civilized countries too?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, last year, I began working with Accessibility, which is a company that makes websites, or the products to make websites, more usable and accessible. And the company has grown a lot over the last year. But we find that even though it can be pretty inexpensive to start the process, the reality is that a lot of people are going, well, yeah, maybe I need to do it, but I really can't do it right now, or I just don't have any money to put into this kind of a project, or it's just not something that I think we really need to worry about. And it's so unfortunate that at the same time, those people provide electric lights for everyone in their offices. They provide coffee machines, they provide computers and a lot of other amenities. But when it comes to dealing with disabilities or making their websites more inclusive so that more people might shop at their sites and so on, they won't do that.
And their mindset is that they have this assumption, well, there's just not enough of them out there. Yeah. So we don't have to do it. But guess what? If you do it, that's going to increase your bottom line, because those 10 people who are now shopping on your website are going to go and tell 10 of their friends, and it's just going to snowball even more. And then they'd be recognized that they are a fully accessible website.
One of the projects that Accessibility is working on, and it's still not live yet, but hopefully it will be sometime in the near future, is called Access Find. What Access Find will be is a database of accessible websites. Any website that has made the effort to become inclusive, not only for people who happen to be blind, but who have other disabilities, will be able to put their website into the Access Find database. And so it will be a central location where people with disabilities can go to find local or whatever websites that they truly can search. And whether the site uses Accessibility or some other mechanism or company to make their website accessible isn't the issue. The issue is that they've done it, however they've done it. And Access Find will allow that to happen. We're not there yet. It's coming, though. And it'll be pretty exciting when that opens. It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's something that is definitely needed, because I think that again, our society lacks is communication. There are all kinds of nonprofit organizations that are doing wonderful things, but the disabled community is not aware of it. So they need to spend more time and effort in shouting it out and say, hey, everybody, this is new. This is what's happening right now. But they don't.
The Nielsen company, the company that does ratings and so on, used to do, and I assume still does, all the ratings for TV shows and so on. The Nielsen rating did a study in 2016 and categorically states that websites that become more inclusive will have brand loyalty that will very much carry over to persons with disabilities, and people will shop those sites rather than going through all the frustration of trying to find some other website that may or may not be inclusive for them. Mm-hmm. It is something that is absolutely substantiable. It's something that can be verified, but we're still not yet seeing nearly enough of our world really deal with that. And it's all about still the same attitudes that, as you said, there aren't enough of them, or We really just don't think that they can do what other people are going to do the shopping for them anyway. And that just isn't the way it works.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so tell me, as a person who happens to be blind, what would you give in the way of advice to someone who is coming to terms with losing their eyesight? You meet someone, either a family member or whatever, of someone who's becoming blind, or you meet a person who is losing their eyesight and becoming blind, what would you say to them?
To me, it's a very personal aspect that they're going through. Some people are fully sighted today and totally blind tomorrow. Some people gradually lose their vision over time. So it comes down to being a personal thing. And my advice would basically be that go through that grieving process, because there is grief involved with any loss, especially when you're losing your vision or your hearing or your mobility skills, and the list goes on. But realize that your life has changed. You can still do pretty much the same things that you've always done. It's just that you have to find new ways of achieving your goals. And that's what it comes down to. The sky's the limit.
It still comes down to, it's not blindness, it's our attitudes. And we need to be as forward-looking in that as people who can see. Because if our attitude is not a positive one about being blind, then we won't be.
Absolutely.
And we will have the challenges.
Yep.
Well, Wayne, this has been fun. I really have enjoyed having you on Unstoppable Mindset. I hope you've liked it as well.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we will have to get together and swap more stories.
But I'll have to come down to California.
Well, it was 97 Fahrenheit today. And according to my lovely little trusty Amazon device, we're going to have an excessive heat warning on Thursday. So if 97 isn't excessive heat, that means it's going to be over 100 is what it really means. So it will be interesting.
Well, where I come from, I'm very northern Ontario. We are so far north, we literally wave to Santa Claus as we're coming to this area. So we have had a couple of frost alerts the last few days.
Well, has the big guy waved back?
I have no idea.
Well, then, you know, you need to put your communication skills to use and come up with a way that you guys can communicate better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks for being on Unstoppable Mindset. If people want to reach out to you, learn more about you and chat with you, how can they do that if they want to learn about your speaking career and so on?
Well, if you'd like to reach out, my email address would be my initials. So it would be wjt.tuttle, and that's T-U-T-T-L-E @gmail.com.
Okay.
I do have a website that it's still under construction, so I'm not sure when that will be up and running, but I will definitely let you know.
Well, let's talk about accessibility going on the site to help you with access. That makes it a lot easier for your website people to do.
Absolutely.
Well, meanwhile, everyone, thank you for joining us today. I'd love to hear what you think about this, as always. Please reach out to me, Michael H.I. at accessibe.com. That's M-I-C-H-A-E-L-H-I at A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E.com. Or visit our podcast page, which is www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is M-I-C-H-A-E-L-H-I-N-G-S-O-N. www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. And of course, as I always ask, and I appreciate everyone who is doing it, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to the podcast and join us regularly. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you are finding us. And we hope that you will do that and join us for other adventures and other future podcasts. And again, Wayne, I really appreciate your time and you being here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset Podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes.
To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled MichaelHingson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibility, and is sponsored by Accessibility. Please visit www.accessibe.com. Accessibe is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.